Hirokazu Yoshikawa, a professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, conducted a study of the children of undocumented parents being raised in the United States. He looked at the effects the exposure has not only on the families involved, but also on the economy and social fabric of our country. And he shared his findings in a book called Immigrants Raising Citizens, Undocumented Parents and Their Young Children, which he discussed on our show this past April. And we are re-airing that conversation for you on this 4th of July. I began by asking Hirokazu Yoshikawa, how many families did you study and for how long?
We studied about 400 families. We recruited them literally the day these babies were born in New York City public hospitals. And we've been following them since with a whole variety of research methods. We recruited them in 2004.
So it's all New York. Is the immigrant experience similar no matter what part of the country they're living in?
New York is certainly a unique city for immigrant families, but to the degree—
Well, we have more of them, right?
We do have more of them. It's been part of the history of New York for centuries. So it was a very interesting city to do this study in, and I myself am a long-term New Yorker. But many of the features of living under the radar and the consequences for children, I think, hold for other parts of the country. And in fact, for less friendly policy environments than New York, we can only imagine that the harmful effects we observed on kids' development in New York are worse.
I just saw a documentary about Shelbyville, Tennessee, a city of the South that has gone through all sorts of changes. And after segregation was eliminated, then they were upset about the Hispanics who came to town to work in the Tyson factory and the pencil factories. Now it's Somalis. And you hear the same things about each of them. They are dirty until they become part of the community, and then they're okay.
This is the part of the long-term history of the United States. We are a nation of immigrants. But one of the surprising things that I learned in terms of the background research for this book was that the category of illegal immigrant wasn't invented till 1888 with the Chinese Exclusion Act. So for much of the Industrial Revolution and the growth of this nation's economy, immigration, there was no such category as illegal immigrant.
Well, today, of course, we limit immigration because we feel that the population is large enough, and many people resent the fact that immigrants come in and take jobs that Americans might have. But the first case, the Chinese Exclusion Act, that was just out-and-out racism. We were still welcoming immigrants, weren't we? Although we gave them a hard time.
Yes. So I think the history of illegal immigration and in this country, certainly during that time, was driven by pinpointing particular racial groups.
When did we start limiting immigration and setting quotas?
Those occurred at different points in the 20th century. For this study, the big contrast was between Dominicans who've been coming to New York City for decades and Mexicans who started coming in the early 1990s at a point when pathways to citizenship were increasingly restricted.
And also Chinese families.
Chinese as well. The low-income Chinese immigration, which has largely been from Fujian province, that wave of migration to New York also started in the early 90s.
Did you notice any differences in the values among the different immigrant groups?
No, that was part of the surprising story again of this book. So overall, we found some real harm to children's development, particularly their early cognitive and language skills as early as at 24 months of life from having a parent without papers. And that was really due to the parents living in fear and not enrolling these citizen children in the kinds of childcare opportunities and learning opportunities that they're eligible for.
So when you approach people about participating in the study, weren't they afraid that you would turn them into the authorities? Aren't they suspicious of anybody who speaks English perfectly, for example?
One of the positive parts of this story was that in certain trusted settings, these families really received and children received the services that they had rights to as citizen children. In the New York City public hospitals, which is where we recruited them, these families had quite good experiences of healthcare around the birth of their children. And so our recruitment rates were you know, of course, conducted in the native language of the families. And so these families were, in general, quite happy to participate.
And they weren't suspicious? Did they benefit anything from participating?
Yes, we, you know, like many research studies, we, of course, you know, paid them some money to participate in the study, and they also received things like books and those kinds of things. We protect their confidentiality so that the stories that are in the book are to some degree masked with some of the details, though the important features are in there.
Did they tend to stay in one place, or did you have to follow them around?
They often moved within New York City. They often moved out to suburbs. But to some degree, the parents without papers were probably a little bit less mobile. They had fewer economic resources simply to even move. They were generally stuck in really the worst jobs in urban America. Between a third and 40% of our undocumented parents were working illegally low wages, wages below the minimum wage in New York State. And it turned out those work conditions actually harmed their children's development.
My guest is Hiro Yoshikawa, a professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He's written a book called Immigrants Raising Citizens, Undocumented Parents and Their Young Children, published by the Russell Sage Foundation. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. And you use the term undocumented rather than illegal immigrant.
Yes, that's closer to the parents' own words, sin papeles, which in Spanish means without papers. So, yeah, I've been using
And you found these people by going to hospitals. Was it important to start when the babies were born?
Yes, and in these kinds of developmental studies, you really do get the full picture of these children's lives from the everyday struggles that parents face, beginning with the first days of life. The other reason for starting so early is that early childhood is an extremely important time for brain development, as we know. These are citizen children who are really the economic future of our country. They are going to be paying for us as we grow older, as the baby boomer generation just started retiring a few weeks ago. These 4.5 million citizen children of parents without papers are really an important part of the future of our nation.
Well, you talked about early development. What about prenatal care? Did their parents get any of that?
These parents had good experiences of prenatal care. They also had good experiences of WIC. And as I mentioned, the experiences of health care from the New York City public hospitals were, they reported as being kind of uniformly positive experiences.
Are there more undocumented immigrants in the United States now than there have been in the past?
Yes. So now there are 11 million undocumented immigrants in the United States from the national data. It's actually down slightly since the Great Recession. Again, of their children, I'm not sure it's widely known that many of them are parents raising young children. These in New York City are the parents that the rest of us often run into many times a day. They might be busboys in our restaurants. They are doing the deliveries. They are, in some cases, you know, often cleaning houses, taking care of children even. So these are people that we run into on the subway in our everyday lives in New York City. But I think people don't quite often understand that these are moms and dads raising children alongside our own children.
Well, I've been hearing a lot recently that women often immigrate when they're pregnant so that their citizen child will anchor them into this country. Was that the case with your groups, your study group?
That was not at all the case in our study. So these are families, I'm glad you raised that, because these are families that I think are exactly the kinds of families we would want in this country, in the sense that they have a long-term commitment to the United States. They were typically here for years living and working before having a child. So, and the national data show that this so-called anchor babies phenomenon only applies to a small minority of immigrants.
Well, how do you respond to people who say that because the parents chose to stay in the country illegally, the U.S. doesn't owe their children anything?
An economy that is aging rapidly, where we need to maximize the potential of children in the country, these 4.5 million citizen children, I believe, are assets for our country's future, not burdens to deport.
So we're saying there's 4.5 million kids. We know that for sure, or I'd imagine that's an estimate because so many people are hiding their status.
Yeah, that's an estimate from census data sets that Jeff Passell at the Pew Hispanic Center has done the research and number crunching on that.
And their status is different if they were born in their parents' home country? Let's say a kid is born in Mexico and then at the age of 6 months comes to the United States. That kid's situation is totally different from
a child
who's born here.
That child would be undocumented. If we look, though, at children under age six with at least one undocumented parent, over 90% are citizens themselves. Their futures are in this country. Their families are not about to pick up and leave.
There have been proposals in some state legislatures to change all of that and to not allow children who were born in this country to be automatically considered citizens. Where does that right actually reside? Why are people, children born in this country, citizens no matter where their parents, no matter what the status of their parents?
Well, so that was a law passed soon after the Civil War. So I know there are proposals to change the Constitution to do that. The research by demographers showing what the consequences would be shows that the number of undocumented in this country would rise by millions as a consequence of that change in the Constitution.
Did most of the parents you worked with attempt to get documented?
They lived in hope for it. Many of them were paying taxes and waiting with the hope that that might make a difference in terms of their prospects for citizenship. And none of that was forthcoming.
Mm-hmm. So they feared more that if they revealed themselves as being undocumented, that they would automatically be deported.
That's right. So one of the pathways through which children's development was directly harmed was that these parents were afraid to identify their employers, despite working extremely high hours, typically 12-hour days, 6 days a week. These parents were reluctant to identify their employers to report the earnings that they made in order to qualify for things like child care subsidies. So a typical story was a father who had been doing deliveries for a deli for over 15 years broke his knees from falling on the ice during the wintertime deliveries in New York City with his older kids, he was ashamed to tell them that he was still a quote-unquote delivery boy after that many years, was afraid to ask for a raise, and did not receive a raise from his employer. So after 15 years, was still making under $10 an hour. That was a fairly typical kind of story for these parents. And these conditions really are not good for children's development or our future as a country.
Well, and the relationship between children and parents. I lived in Chinatown for quite a while, and many kids told me that in some level they had to be their parents' parents because when the phone rang, they had to answer because they were the ones who spoke English. When you had to deal with an insurance company or, in fact, pretty much anybody, they acted as translators even when they were 5 and 6 years old.
You're right. There's a lot of strengths in these families, The documented and undocumented parents in our study, for example, didn't differ in their rates at which they engaged their children and provided cognitively stimulating activities like reading books to them, telling stories. So despite their extremely high work hours and terrible work conditions, when they got home, they really maximized the time they spent with their children. So very highly involved parents. So this was less a story about parenting and more about access to things like good jobs for the parents and learning opportunities for the children.
Even with all their hardships, do you think that they would say it was a better life for their families here than in their home country?
They typically did talk about their home lives back in the country of origin being ones of great hardship. No, that's right. So, for example, for the Mexican wave of migration to New York City, that's been from the Mixteca region of Mexico. So these states like Puebla, Guerrero, that are some of the poorest states in Mexico. That's an area a bit south of Mexico City.
My guest is Hirokazu Yoshikawa, and he is a professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, the author of Immigrants Raising Citizens, Undocumented Parents, and Their Young Children, published by Russell Sage Foundation. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with a conversation I had in April with Hirokazu Yoshikawa. He's a professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and he was here to discuss his book, Immigrants Raising Citizens, Undocumented Parents and Their Young Children. Many listeners responded to it, and we decided to re-air it for you today. One of the things I asked him was, during the study, did any of the families leave the United States, either voluntarily or because they were deported?
There was a very interesting story with the Chinese low-income immigrant population that we recruited. So many of them sent their babies back to China before the baby was 6 months old. And that was...
Despite the fact that they were citizens and the parents were undocumented and living here illegally?
That's right. Despite the fact that these children were citizens. Typically, these parents did not have... the grandparents of the child, so their own parents in the country, and they were working very, very high hours, again, at Chinese restaurants, typically 6 days a week, 12 to 14 hours a day. And some of them were in debt to the snakeheads or smugglers to whom they had paid very, very high fees to come to this country, and so they were paying off debts, did not have the ability to pay for infant childcare. So they sent these babies back very early in their lives.
Well, are the children able to get health care?
In China?
Here.
Here.
Is that one of the reasons they're sending them back? I'd imagine another reason, because I lived in Chinatown. I spoke to people who were concerned that their children became too Americanized, and they wanted them to have a real Chinese education as well, real sense of their own culture. And that led to all sorts of confusion because on the one hand, they were depending on the kids to be Americanized. And on the other hand, they were upset that the kids wanted to go to McDonald's.
Mm-hmm. This was really a story about the cost of infant childcare, which is very, very high. And with both parents working those kinds of hours and with no grandparents around, they sent the babies back to be taken care of
and when
by
they
their grandparents.
Don't, what happens? Because if a child doesn't see a doctor as often, a pediatrician as often as we might expect,
no,
how would that affect the development of the child?
I think the development of these children, we need to worry about their social and emotional development because the plans were typically to bring them back around preschool age or age of entry into schools in New York. And from this was not our study, but from reports from childcare providers or preschool teachers, they've reported that these kids coming back from having been raised by their grandparents and adjusting to their biological parents often for the first time encounter some emotional and behavioral problems and difficulties.
We're seeing that in China as well, where parents are leaving Western China and going to the big cities in the East where they have jobs. And then they come back on Chinese New Year and the kids said, I don't even know who you are. My grandparents are my real parents. Well, what happens when these kids then have to go to school? Are the parents afraid to enroll them? Because then they have to, don't they have to deal with the fact that they're not documented?
Well, we have a public school system in this country that is really open to all children in the country.
Although there are legislators who'd like to change that as well. Yep. I've been reading about recently.
That's right. We certainly have a lot of states where policies are moving towards driving these families further into the shadows.
So are these parents, other than enrolling their kids in school, are they taking advantage of other things, community programs for their kids?
In New York, the new group with high rates of being without papers is quite scattered across the city. So they were not aware of a lot of community supports. They were not high utilizers of services. They showed very high rates of church attendance, which was very interesting. So there's certainly a role for faith-based organizations to provide support to these families. These families were often reporting very low rates of social support being available to them, whether it was to help them raise their kids or make ends meet. So these everyday kinds of tasks, they were often had more isolated conditions. Typically, the other adults in their social networks being without papers themselves. For some of our parents, our interviewers and our field workers were the first people to explain to them that there were public libraries in New York City, that there was a program called Head Start where their child would learn the names of fruits, I think was one of the quotes. And these parents, when they did find out this information, interestingly, it was often someone that they met from a older immigrant group, like a Dominican mother down the street or someone they had met, who offered them this information that they really had no access to.
Well, since immigrants, at least in this city, tend to live in immigrant communities, I would think that there would be a lot more exchange of information.
Well, interestingly,
Dominicans going to one neighborhood, Asians going to another, Mexicans going to a different one.
Mexicans in New York City are too recent a group to have a large ethnic enclave the way Washington Heights.
Sunset Park and places.
Yeah, so
like
there
that.
Are some growing concentrations in East Harlem. This is part of the, again, the this succession, part of the real history of New York City is Spanish Harlem started being called Spanish Harlem when it was a Puerto Rican enclave. Then it became a Dominican enclave, and now it's increasingly a Mexican neighborhood. But if you look at the census data, for example, Mexicans are still scattered and at much, much lower concentrations than the Dominicans are at. And it's this difference in when a new immigrant group comes in that the numbers are simply not large enough. And so they tend to be more isolated from other members of, in this case, other Mexican families.
And how much of that is also determined by the kinds of jobs that these people get?
Absolutely.
Mexicans
that's part of the
tend to work in different professions than the Chinese or the Dominicans or Arabs who are coming in or Africans who are coming into the country.
That's right. There are certainly niche occupations, and some of the very worst occupations for this group were ones that they had access to right after arrival. So flower selling on the street, for example, which is because of street vending laws is often an illegal job and so very risky with extraordinarily low pay of as low as $150 or $200 a week was a quite typical first occupation for one of these immigrants right after arrival in New York City.
A listener wrote on our show page, illegal aliens, I'm quoting exactly, illegal aliens use food stamps, send their kids to public schools, using our hospitals, taking jobs, etc. Most of this without paying taxes. It isn't fair. Plus, illegal immigrants drive wages down. I'm also in support of more aggressive programs to deport illegal immigrants. We're barely able to take care of the legal citizens living here.
So I can certainly understand that opinion. At the same time, we have these millions of citizen children in our country who are potentially going to support us or help support us in as the economy ages. Or
why would they rather than the children of people who are already legal?
Certainly all children in this country. To the extent that we do have birthright citizenship in the United States, until it's revoked. It's a question of whether these children should have access or not to opportunities to maximize their learning and eventually their contributions as productive citizens.
So you're saying that you understand the resentment about undocumented immigrants, but we shouldn't be punishing their children? Or should we be changing our attitude about the undocumented as well?
These children were not old enough to know about public libraries, for example, or learning opportunities. So to the extent that we care about their development, we should care about supporting their parents for their children's futures.
How does the stress at home affect these kids?
That was another story in this study, which was that parents' levels of stress, hardship, psychological distress were also resulting in lower cognitive skills in these kids, again, as early as at 2 years.
And I'm assuming that many of them live in very crowded conditions, which adds to stress levels.
That's right. That's right. And that's something to worry about as the kids get older in terms of not having a quiet place to study or that kind of thing.
So what percentage of children of undocumented immigrants wind up going to college?
That's something it's the other end of the developmental age span, and I actually don't have that information.
But you did say that their cognitive skills are affected by the conditions they're growing up in.
That's right. That's right. So they are at risk for lower educational achievement in school, certainly.
Yep. So what changes would you like to see in immigration policy?
So certainly the fundamental change of a comprehensive immigration reform, which is something that the Obama administration has expressed a willingness to move forward on, that our former President George W. Bush did move ahead the agenda in 2006. That is one solution, but I think there are other solutions as well. So these children who don't have access to learning opportunities in terms of low-income immigrant families in the United States, we know that they can benefit greatly from preschool education. For example, Mexican-American children in the United States show lower enrollment rates in preschool than Mexican children in Mexico. That is something that we should be concerned about, because we know that preschool education more than pays for itself in terms of benefits to children's development.
Are they breaking the law if they don't go to school, even if their parents are undocumented?
The preschool? No, we don't.
No, I mean regular school, because every child has to go to public school at a certain age.
That's right. And I don't know actually whether current policies are driving parents to keep their children out of school. I don't know the data on that.
Well, you mentioned that President Bush pushed for immigration reform. Both Republicans and Democrats have called for it, and yet we're moving in an opposite direction. We have more and more states following the example of Arizona in making it harder for undocumented immigrants to live in this country. We have the example of that person who wrote in earlier, a lot of anger toward undocumented immigrants. So is it likely we're going to see much change?
Even now, there are some states that are moving in some other directions. So Utah, for example, that has moved towards the legislature passing a law to allow a guest worker kind of status for some of their undocumented immigrants. So again, these are parents who are stable families, committed long-term to the United States. I think some of the policy proposals that were put forward in the past were that if parents were playing by the rules, working, displayed this long-term commitment to the United States, that a pathway to citizenship could be provided. Of course, waiting in line behind others, but that's one approach to it that Utah has moved in that direction.
Although it's too soon to tell whether the Utah immigrant children are doing any better.
Far too soon to tell.
What about, how long was your study?
We're continuing to follow them now. The children are turning age 6. I don't have the data in terms of the update, but the book follows their development up to the age of 3.
Well, 3 before you can find out whether they're
right.
going to actually do well in this society or not, whether they're going to do well in school or not.
That's right.
The conventional wisdom is that Asian kids do particularly well in public school. That's despite all of these hardships, whether their parents are documented or undocumented?
Well, those studies on Asian kids are typically involve a mix of Asian families of different socioeconomic statuses, of different ethnic and immigrant groups. Certainly the data on this particular group of low-income Chinese families and their kids suggests that the kids' social and emotional development might be at risk.
What about the other communities that you looked at?
So the Mexicans and Dominicans were the other two immigrant groups. And if we look at the national data, it is true that Mexican-American children are showing lower levels of cognitive school readiness than groups with lower rates of undocumented status.
Now, this book only covers up to the age of 3. What will you be looking at specifically as the children grow older?
So we look at their parenting behaviors. And again, these parents are truly committed to their children's learning and achievement. That was a factor on which they didn't differ, the documented or undocumented alike. These parents were committed to their children's learning, but we'll be following up in terms of the parents' well-being, their parenting behaviors. We'll continue to look at their work experiences.
Did things change when the parents, in some cases, became citizens?
Well, the study was conducted at a point when the undocumented had no pathway to citizenship, so no one switched statuses.
So that's another thing that you may notice in the future if some of these people do wind up becoming citizens. Hirokazu Yoshikawa is a professor of education at Harvard University's Graduate School of Education. His book, Immigrants Raising Children, Undocumented Parents and Their Young Children, from the Russell Sage Foundation. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.